particularly come the qualifiers next September, that the players will have an idea of what me and Martin are about. And that was, we're very driven, very professional. We want to do things properly. And we want to win football matches. That's the name of the game, to win.
It's festival fun here on the Why Big Football Show. We're having snowball fights as the Irish soccer feast is in the oven. It's a great Christmas show, and I'd like to take the opportunity to say hello to all Irish fans over in Australia. We'll be talking to Perth Glory FC's media man Gareth Morgan about the A-League as a potential nest for Irish soccer players. We speak to world snooker champion Ken Doherty about his love and passion for Irish soccer. Galway are united once again in the form of Galway FC, and media man Keane O'Connell fills us in. This is the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email dave@talkingsport.org. We're also TalkingSport.org on Twitter and Facebook. Well, it's been a roller coaster year for the boys in green, a new management team in place, and things will get very interesting in 2014. Well, we're delighted to have FAI Chief Executive John Delaney joining us once again on the Why Big Football Show. John, we recently seen Everton boys James McCarthy and Seamus Coleman pulling a Christmas cracker and revealing a very nice Christmas present that the FAI were promoting at the start of the month, a Republic of Ireland jersey and a ticket to the Serbia game, Ireland's first match in 2014. I think it was 50 for adults, 40 for kids. I think the offer is finished now, but a very successful offer, no doubt.
Well, so I think it's obviously important in the difficult times we live in that that we recognise that supporters are finding things difficult, and the team hasn't been as successful obviously over the last campaign as anybody would have wanted. There is a new bounce with the new management team in place. There's no doubt about it. With Martin and Roy involved. There's a real enthusiasm about the Irish team. But I think it's important to come into Christmas that we did a special offer. I think it's great value. You get an Irish jersey and a Serbia game for 50 quid, as you said, if you're an adult, and 40 if you're a child. And yeah, there's been a very good response to that too as well. There's no doubt about that. But it's the right thing to do, and it's important that we recognise that times are tougher, and that the team hadn't achieved getting to Brazil, which was the objective, of course, at this time last year.
Indeed, John. And, for the Serbia match, it'll be the first squad that will be picked by Martin O'Neill. So no doubt fans will get a real feel for the type of players O'Neill has got in his plans. And that's got to bring a lot of people into the Aviva Stadium in March.
It is. I think there's been a real positive vibe since we announced Martin and Roy. There's no doubt about that. And we saw that for the Latvia game. I think there must have been 20-odd thousand extra people at that game than would have been there had we not made their appointment, if I put it to you that way. They played very well in the night. We did well in Poland. He used 22, I think, of the 23 players. And you're right, like when he names his squad in February, I think that'll be done in Limerick, actually. We're going to do that in Limerick because it's the city of sport and culture for 2014, and we'd like to recognise that. So I think Martin will do that in Limerick probably in February or so. And I think for everywhere I go at the moment, there's certainly a positivity there now that certainly wasn't there. Obviously, the night we were beaten by Austria in Vienna.
Yeah, certainly. And just to go back to the jerseys, I know a lot of fans have been talking about the new black away strip, which we've seen the boys in green wear from time to time. It's become a bit of a novelty, I think, to Irish fans. I think are we the only country that has worn a black strip? I know England, I think, wore a dark navy strip for a while, but are we making a little bit of history there?
I don't know that, but I'll tell you, it's better than the orange one we wore out in Macedonia by a long distance, trust me.
You'd be surprised, John, the amount of fans actually looking to get their hands on that orange one. I think there's one of the fans collects all the shirts, and the orange one is one of the ones he keeps getting asked about.
Is there maybe the Burnet, maybe the Burnet, but it didn't bring us much luck. But I think certain people like certain colours. I mean, I love the green. The green is our colour, it's our country's colour. The black gear, funny enough, a lot of supporters like it. It's very good for leisure wear, I'm told, and things like that. But ultimately, whether they wear black, orange, or green, it's getting good results is what it's about, isn't it? That encourages everybody, gets people in good form, gets people optimistic, gets people supporting the national team. And I really do hope, of course, we're another Christmas away, or Christmas a bit away, from Paris in 2006 or France in 2016. But please God, in the next time I'm talking to you at a Christmas show, we're talking with great expectation about going to France in 2016.
Indeed. Well, it seems like every year, the past few years anyway, John, has been a roller coaster for Irish football. And looking back really on 2013, as you said, the disappointing World Cup campaign, saying goodbye to Giovanni, then the buzz around the dream team of Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane coming in, the appointment, of course, of Ruud Dokter as high performance coach, and some good results as well for the under-21s and under-19s squad as well. It's been a real mixed bag, I think.
Well, it is. Well, I suppose football, as in life, is a roller coaster. But certainly, when you take the senior international team, there was and will be a lot of disappointment that we didn't go to Brazil, because as we get nearer to the World Cup next summer, and everybody's focusing in on this huge tournament, and we're not there, I mean, that'll hurt. That'll hurt me. It'll hurt supporters. It'll hurt everybody. I think, as you said, the appointment of lads gave a big bounce. Then Martin and Roy coming in. Ruud Dokter is a huge role in Irish football. You know, an underage development plan, which is high up the priority for the board of the FAI. He's coming into us in January with a review of the emerging talent program. We're putting some of the representative bodies already put their names forward for a technical committee, which will be coaches. And I think the coaches in this country should have a big say on player pathway. And that's very much, I think, one of our biggest objectives in the next 12 months within Irish football, is getting a complete national development plan, getting a technical committee with coaches involved in determining the player pathway. We've got 33,000 coaches in our coaching ladder, so we need their experience to tell us what's best for the players. So Ruud's appointment, as you quite rightly said, was a very important one. But look, any day in Irish football, there's ups and downs, but I think towards the back end of this year, there's been more ups and downs, but certainly not qualifying for the World Cup was a big blow and will be a big disappointment when the World Cup takes place and we're not present.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I don't think the Brazil, as much colour as it does have, it won't be as colourful as if the Irish were there. On the domestic scene, John, St Patrick's Athletic winning the Airtricity League and Sligo Rovers winning the Cup in another cracking final. It's great to see Irish football being so competitive these days from a domestic level.
Well, it is. I mean, St. Pat's, won the league, deserved to win the league. Liam Buckley's a good manager. He's got some very good players. Made some good acquisitions, bringing players like Killian Brennan in. He did really, really well for them. So, I mean, they'll be in the Champions League, obviously, next year. That's a big one for Liam and St. Pat's. And I know their owner, Gary Kelleher, has stood by that club in a very strong way to make sure that it has the stability so that, you know, people like Liam Buckley can get on with their jobs. It is very competitive in the Premier League, there's no doubt about it. Who would have said that Shamrock Rovers wouldn't get into Europe for 2 years in a row after their tremendous performance the year before that? Sligo have a hell of a side. They won the Cup in dramatic Cup final, fantastic Cup final against Drogheda. Both teams deserve huge credit. And it's great to be playing those matches at the Aviva Stadium, for sure. And then you've only got to look at the Cork are coming. You know, we've got one team in Galway back in the first division next season, which I think will bring its own merits and its own strengths. And you can never discount Shamrock Rovers. You can never discount them. They're, you know, they're a big brand name in Irish football, as we all know. And, the tremendous results, as I said, a couple of years ago in Europe, haven't had the same results in the league, but they won a couple of cups this season as well. So, all in all, I think it's a very competitive league now. And from a geography point of view, it's getting better too, because Derry and Sligo, Cork, obviously, and, you know, the one team in Galway, Limerick back in the Premier Division, as well as Athlone Town. So there's a better spread of teams outside of Dublin, which is important for any national league.
And your own team, Waterford United, I think finishing fourth in Division 1, but no doubt you'll be hoping to see them make a big push next season.
Yeah, I'm hoping every year. Obviously, my dad was chairman of the club in 1980 when they won the FAI Senior Cup. They only won the Cup twice, in 1937 and 1980. They had a great tradition of winning leagues in the 60s and 70s. And they just can't seem to get out of the First Division. You know, they got to the playoff last year, beaten by Dundalk. Haven't got a 2-2 draw up in Oriel Park, a beat at home. Next player, Michael Rafter, who used to be a Waterford, scoring a couple of goals, I think.
Yeah.
And this year they just fell a little bit short. They just fell a little bit short, but it was a strong division, you know. Obviously, Athlone did really, really well, and Longford got to the playoffs after beating Merview. I think on the last day was the Waterford lost down in Cove, and at the beaten Cove, they got to the playoffs, but they didn't. And it's going to be a very difficult division in the coming season, because Shelburne have gone down there. Shelburne will want to get straight back up. This new entity in Galway will be strong. Longford got to the playoffs. for 2 years in a row in the first division. They got to the playoffs. They got Waterford. So, I mean, it won't be. It's not an easy division to get out of.
And as you mentioned there, Galway, the new entity, I suppose, bringing back a lot of the old fans. And it's great to see soccer is going to start thriving in the West again in Galway City. I know Sligo have had the full mantle for the past few years. And Athlone Town, great to see such diverse football. Athlone being back at the top table, really kind of the centre of Ireland, and no doubt a real soccer town. They'll be delighted to have soccer back there and being at the top table of Irish soccer.
Well, they will not long, because they have a great history, you know, with Michael O'Connor, the O'Connor brothers. You know, they have a great history. They won a couple of leagues back in the 70s and 80s or whatever it was. I think Trapattoni's first time in Ireland was playing Athlone, wasn't it, when he was with...
Yeah.
I think it was Inter Milan, I think. AC Milan,
AC Milan,
yeah. In 75 or something, that was his first time. He was looking for what he called the Tribune, and there was no Tribune. So that was the side of the field. But they're a good club. I know people like Paddy McCall, who's our president for the years, put a huge effort in there. And it's good. It's great to see them back. From the Galway point of view, I put a lot of work into that, along with many, many other people, to, you know, encourage Salthill and Mervew to step out to Connacht Senior League and to form with gust the supporters, which is always very important. The supporters are on board, along with the Galway League, who own MDC Park. And then we got the Comer brothers involved in a very good sponsorship deal to give them a good start for 3 years. I think they're getting, you know, a sizable sum of money. So that's a project, I mean, I'm thrilled about. We went down, we launched there a couple of weeks ago. It was a great launch. There was a great feeling around the room that all these different parties have come together for the one objective, to make senior football in Galway great again. And, you know, they've got a very good manager in Tommy Dunn. Family's got a great tradition in the game. So I wish them well next season. I wish them well.
Yeah, I've been getting press releases into my email on Galway. They're signing everybody left, right and centre. So it's great to see, and it's certainly a push in the right direction. From an international point of view, John, what would be your main hope for 2014? No doubt a good draw for the Euro qualifiers will be the main thing.
Well, we're a second seed. I mean, sometimes I read in the papers that our FIFA rankings are dropping, but we've moved from a third seed to a second seed, which gives you a little edge. You never know. You never know when a draw is made. You know, you can be lucky and unlucky. That's on the 23rd of February in Nice. I'll be going out with Martin. And, you know, there is such a thing as a lucky and unlucky draw. You can get better groups than others. But whatever we get, we've got to have the confidence in ourselves that with the management team that we have and the players that we have, that we're as good as anybody on any given day, if, you know, to try and, you know, get out of the group. If the top two go through, the best third place team goes through, and then the eight third teams play for four spots. So when 24 teams are going to qualify, it gives us a great chance. It certainly gives us a better chance. But all those other countries like Armenia are improving as well. We've seen evidence of that. And I know it's a cliche, but there are very few easy games in football. But let's look forward to the draw in February, see who we get. We'll know on that day then who we're playing and when we're playing it. There's new rules about that from UEFA, which is good. We don't have to do these fixture meetings anymore. And I think that's something that I've got, you know, obviously, you know, it's the most important thing.
Yeah.
The first couple of months will be that draw, because we see who we get and when we're playing them.
Yeah, and from a performance point of view, John, we've been talking about younger players in the squad for quite a while now. But I think it's probably fair to say the time has come to no longer refer to them as younger players. The likes of Seamus Coleman and James McCarthy, they're quite experienced internationals almost at this stage. Mark Wilson and a couple of the others coming through. It'll be a real time over the next 2 years for them to step up to the plate.
Well, it would. And obviously Seamus Coleman and James McCarthy are playing the Premier League with Everton, who are doing very well at the moment. Darren Gibson's with that club as well. You know, please God, he gets back injured or gets back from that injury
before
the end of this coming season. I read talks of Aidan McGeady going to Everton. I mean, it'd be great to have those four players at Everton and playing in the team, you know, because that we keep hearing about some of our players not playing at the highest level. But at the moment, Seamus Coleman and James McCarthy certainly are. And, you know, Robbie Brady's got looks a great prospect for us, you know, once he gets game time. I think we've got a lot to look forward to. I really do. I think we've got a lot to look forward to. And, you know, I genuinely believe that Martin and Roy in their respective roles we'll get the best out of our players.
Now, Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, they have said, John, that they're open to exploring all avenues and possibly recruiting new players through the granny rule and eligibility rule and that. Now, I know a lot of Irish fans seem to be quite divided on the issue. Some people will say that we shouldn't have to be trying to beg players to play for Ireland, you know, those that might not get their game for England, whereas others will make the point that we're a small country, we use our unique diaspora to its full potential, and it's necessary in order to get the best players on the pitch. What would be kind of your views on that whole thing?
Well, first and foremost, truthfully, I don't know any time we begged a player to play for us.
Yeah.
Never. A player might have inquired about his availability to us. We might have said, you know, through a grandmother or a father or a mother, you can play for us, you know, but it's your choice. And that's always been the way with us. And we've never, in my time, brought any player in my opinion, that we said, listen, we got down on our knees and said, please play for Ireland. That's not the way it should be. I think if you talk to Mick McCarthy, Ray Houghton, people who are second-generation Irish, I mean, they're as Irish as anybody. And they believe hugely in that. Andy Townsend was a great captain for us too. You can go back through the years. My own experience, Shea Brennan, who grew up in our house, he won a European Cup medal at Man United. And he was the first English-born player to play for Ireland. His mum was from Carlow. And Shea considers himself Irish and loved playing for Ireland. He got 23 caps and he was captain of Ireland. So I think sometimes it can be easy to dismiss people because of where they were born. It depends on the attitude they come, and of course, naturally, the ability, of course, as well. But most of the lads I've seen come in, you know, bar none, to my mind, have come in with the right attitude. They're professional footballers, wanting to play for Ireland, wanting to do well for Ireland.
Yeah, I think a lot of people agree with you there, John. I don't think we have ever seen any Irish player who hasn't really given 100% in the green shirt. You know, it's certainly great to see. Just before I let you go, John, on a completely other matter, are you looking forward to Christmas? Will you be able to relax for a bit? Because I know you're football crazy. Will you be able to spend a bit of time with the family and forget about it? Or is the plans already in motion and you're looking through things for 2014?
Oh, I'll tell you, my dad had a bypass on Monday, which went well, thankfully. So that kind of that came out of nowhere. A double bypass went well; it went very well. So he'll be in hospital for a bit. So I think we'll spend a bit of time visiting him. To be honest with you, he was very good to me, very very good to me. And thankfully, last Monday, obviously it's a worry when your dad, his parents, gets a little bit ill. And thankfully, the operation went well. I was there on Sunday. Monday was the operation. Tuesday morning. And we'll be nipping down to see him a bit during Christmas to keep his spirits up. And thank God it went well. And please God he'll make a full recovery.
Yeah, well, please God he will make a full recovery, John, and pass on the wishes from myself and, of course, all Irish fans. You know, we hope everything will go well there. Listen, John, I wish yourself and your family a very good Christmas. And we look forward to kicking the ball rolling in 2014 and join another roller coaster, which is Irish football. Thanks a million.
Thanks, William. My pleasure. Good luck to you now. Bye-bye.
Yes, indeed. FAI Chief Executive John Delaney joining us on the Why Big Football Show, and we wish his father a very speedy recovery. We'll be right back here. Stay tuned. If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on talkingsport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. Now, on last month's show, UEFA coach Marco Sullivan spoke about football development in Ireland compared with that in Europe. Mark happened to mention that he had also seen the development plans for soccer in Australia. We've also recently seen some Irish players feature in the A-League, and we're delighted to speak to Gareth Morgan, who has been heavily involved in the Perth Glory Club over the last few years. Gareth, can you tell us a little bit about your experience over there and the kind of work that you're involved with?
Yeah, well, it started off around about 6 years ago. I moved across to Perth from Sydney, having been a football journalist in the UK, and managed to get initially some freelance work with Perth Glory, gradually stepped that up and ended up becoming, I guess, club reporter would be one title, and then eventually media manager at the club, which was certainly a fascinating job with plenty of ups and downs, and gave me a very good insight into how clubs are organised over there and the nature of the league and so on. So it was, definitely a job that I thoroughly enjoyed.
The league itself, over here in Ireland, I think people follow the League of Ireland, but also the Premier League in England, which seems to be the most dominant league in Europe almost at this stage. What is the A-League like to follow as a reporter and a journalist? Is it exciting? It has its ups and downs, no doubt.
It's a very interesting league. You always get people will ask, how does it compare in terms of on-field quality? And it's a very difficult question because you do have to bear in mind the weather conditions. Like the League of Ireland, they've switched to play in the summer to avoid clashing with other codes and so on. So they do tend to play in some very hot conditions. So the pace of play can sometimes be a little bit slower. And you do have a wide range of players. If I could use a British comparison, you would certainly have certain players who wouldn't look out of place in the Premier League. Equally, you would have certain players at any given club who perhaps wouldn't be much better than Conference or League Two. So I think if I was to try and give an overall comparison that people might relate to, I think generally you'd say probably top of League One in England would be about the closest comparison that I could make in terms of on-field quality. And then crowds, the average crowd at an A-League game across the country, you're looking at around about 13,000 to 15,000, something along those lines, which, you know, it's a decent...
It's a solid number, indeed.
It is. It's a solid number. I think sometimes people are misled when they watch games on BT Sport or ESPN. It does sometimes look as if the stadiums are, you know, almost deserted occasionally. You do have to bear in mind that a lot of these games are played in stadiums where the capacity is 40,000 plus. So sometimes you'll get a 13 or 15,000 crowd and they can rattle around a little bit in those stadiums. And on TV, it can look as if the ground is pretty much deserted, which isn't necessarily the case. But it's a growing league. Certainly the on-field product, if you like, is improving year on year. And so are the attendances. The attendances last year were the best ever in A-League history. And when I say A-League history, you do have to bear in mind that only goes back to the 2005-2006 season. So it's a young league. But it's one that's definitely improving rapidly on and off the field.
It's quite interesting you talked about the attendance there, Gareth. And I remember watching, I think Liverpool were playing over there, or a couple of the English clubs that have played matches like that. And my God, the ground is absolutely full. And the atmosphere that the Australian fans, that might be fans of the Premier League club in question, but still they were able to drum up a huge atmosphere. It just goes to show that football, soccer is still very big over there.
It is. The game you're referring to, yeah, when Liverpool came over to play Melbourne Victory, an absolute sellout in Melbourne, a kind of crowd of 70, 80,000, as I recall. And certainly Melbourne is the capital of Australian sport in general. And if you're looking for an atmospheric occasion, I would thoroughly recommend, you know, attending a Melbourne Victory game. They tend to have the biggest atmosphere if you do happen to be in the Melbourne area at any time in the future. But yeah, that was a massive occasion. Manchester United were out as well earlier this year to play. It's more of an exhibition game, really, against an A-League All-Star side. But again, that drew a huge crowd to the Olympic Stadium in Sydney. There's a massive, massive interest in European football over in Australia. The massive ratings for the English Premier League and also for, you know, the top European league. So it's although AFL and Rugby League are the dominant codes, with Rugby League being that the case in New South Wales and Queensland, and then AFL being the dominant code in South Australia and Western Australia, certainly participation numbers in football are massive. And as I said, the number of fans going into games is also increasing. So it is on the up, and it's probably bigger in Australia than some people would realise looking from overseas.
You mentioned the summer soccer and the fact that they play the league at a different time of the season to what we're used to in the Premier League. Now, the League of Ireland, of course, is a summer soccer league, and it's trying to do something different and using, I suppose, good conditions to play football. That is something that a few countries now, Gareth, have taken up. Do you think that's benefiting Australia, playing a league when, say, mainstream European football isn't actually on, that people can actually have an interest? And, of course, the pitches and that, the quality of the games will be a lot better, I'd imagine.
Definitely. The quality of the pitches, as people might have seen when they're watching on TV here, are, by and large, absolutely exceptional. And luckily, they're quite sensible in terms of kickoff times. if it's January, February, obviously the hottest months over there, they will try and make sure that games kick off at 7 o'clock or 5-6 o'clock in the evening rather than, you know, traditional 3 o'clock or even earlier. So they're quite sensible about that kind of thing. I think it was essential, if football was to establish a kind of foothold in the market, that they didn't try and put themselves up against sports that have such a massive tradition and such a massive following. And it's definitely worked out in their favour. As I said, those attendances, it was a record attendance for the season last year. So they're definitely doing something right. They do have to work to try and build up traditions that aren't necessarily in place already. They will try and hype up certain derbies, talk about a history developing and that kind of thing, which isn't always easy in a young league. But they're working well, and I think they're succeeding more than they're not.
And is it kind of like the MLS in the way that they're hoping perhaps to get a lot of players that have, they're well-known players, will bring a lot of publicity to the league? We've seen how much David Beckham brought football in America in the MLS onto a whole new level. Then you had the likes of Thierry Henry and Robbie Keane and lots of greats, Tim Cahill, an Australian one as well. You know, fantastic to see, you know, such big names over there. Is that something that you see the A-League going down that road, in the sense maybe trying to get some of the older players from European football, which will really help to promote the game?
Well, it's certainly interesting, Dave, that you mentioned the MLS, because that is a league that the A-League often looks at in terms of its future direction, being of a kind of a similar age, I guess, in some ways, and battling against other codes as the A-League is. But they've already very much gone down the marquee player route, as it's known, in Australia. When you look at some of the names that are already there, names that would be familiar to your listeners, the likes of William Gallas is there, Alessandro Del Piero, Emil Heskey.
He's getting a lot of people following Emil Heskey's performances over the past few years. It really has been quite remarkable.
He's, and I think what Emil has done well, and Del Piero is another prime example of this, is when you go to Australia as a marquee player, a little bit like David Beckham, you are expected to try and help them grow the game. It's not just that, you know, you play for 90 minutes and then you disappear. You know, they do use them very, very widely in promotional activities and that kind of thing. And to be fair to Heskey and Del Piero, they've really bought into that. They've been fantastic ambassadors for the game. Okay, Heskey has had his injury problems. He hasn't scored a huge amount of goals. And I can hear certain fans in of UK club shouting no change there. But you know, he's done a great job off the field for Newcastle Jets. Del Piero the same. And in fairness, Harry Kewell, he's been at the two Melbourne clubs. He's had his second Melbourne club now. He works very hard as well to try and grow the game in his home country. So that's certainly something that the A-League or the FFA put a lot of emphasis on. They do like their marquee players to be more than just 90-minute performers.
And we've seen a couple of Irish players, Gareth, over in Australia over the past few years. The likes of Liam Miller was playing, and a couple of other, I think Billy Mamet as well. There's been a couple of boys. And, you know, would it be a real option, I suppose, for Irish players coming towards the end of their careers? Or do you see it as maybe it's changing and maybe Irish players with international aspirations could even start off there if they're not getting a club, say, in England straight away, which is something that we seem to find with up-and-coming players?
Well, it's an interesting question, because there is a rule in the league that you're only allowed to have 5 overseas players. So they are quite precious about the way that they allocate those limited spots. So you're not really going to, I wouldn't use the word waste, but you're not going to allocate that spot to kind of an untried overseas player or somebody who hasn't had too much experience at a good level. You would take a chance on a local player rather than do that. So that does kind of limit a certain genre of players, I guess, from trying their luck over there. As you mentioned, Liam Miller is there. We do tend to get players heading over kind of towards the end of their careers, if you like. And we have had a few League of Ireland players who have been over. Adam Hughes was another one who I know was at Drogheda, and I think he was at Sligo as well at one point. Stephen Gray had a season over with Melbourne Heart. I know he was at Bohemians at one time. A couple of Northern Ireland players have been over. Terry McFlynn was the captain of Sydney FC until very recently. So there has been, you know, there have been one or two, not an influx by any means. And like I said, that limit on overseas players will sort of prevent some players from trying their luck over there. I think you do get others who will play in the tier below in the various state Premier Leagues. I know there's Mark O'Reilly, for example, who was at Bohemians a couple of years ago. He was playing in the New South Wales Premier League up until last season. So there are players over there, but as I said, there are certain restrictions that perhaps prevent more from going than might be the case.
Yeah, fantastic stuff altogether. And you mentioned local players and the difference with local and overseas players, but it's probably fair to say, Garrett, as everybody knows now, a lot of Irish are now in Australia, and of course they're married to Australians, and there'll be a lot of young Australian-born Irish players coming up through the Australian structures in football. I know one particular player was Zach Gilsen, and I think he's with Barcelona now, and I know he's originated in Ireland, but I think he was brought up kind of for a few years in Australia. For an Irish player to come through the ranks in Australia, the structures themselves, I think a lot of work is getting put in behind the scenes to make sure that they get the best possible start to their football career. That's obviously going to be a positive down the line.
That's absolutely right. And it's funny you should mention Zach Gilsen, because he was based in Western Australia, where I was obviously working. And another one is Brandon O'Neill, who's on the fringes of the Perth Glory first team at the moment. Born in Australia, but two Irish players. And a really nice fellow, actually, Brandon. Hopefully one of those ones that you just desperately want to do well. But yeah, in terms of the development, the structures that have been put in place, there's been a bit of a Dutch revolution over in Australia in terms of the technical development of players. They've got Han Berger has taken over as kind of head of technical development at FFA, and that's the route that they've gone down. It's very much 4-3-3. There's a sort of emphasis on almost the Barcelona style, as it were, which of course had a Dutch background originally as well. So yeah, certainly they've put a lot of things in place, and I do think perhaps in 10, 15 years time, you could see Australia developing more on the international scene as a bit more of a force than they are at the moment. They're in a little bit of a transitional phase internationally. You've got a lot of senior players coming towards the end of their careers, and I wouldn't be rushing out to put any money on them in next year's World Cup, especially when you bear in mind they're in a group
with
Holland, Spain and Chile. So
yeah, it's all a learning curve though, as you said, Gareth. In terms of the League of Ireland, and what I was saying about players that might be in the league and they're not getting swooped on by English clubs just yet, Australia, the A-League would be certainly an option for them. I know it's a long way away, but as we've seen, Ayman Zayed ended up in Iran becoming a superstar. Would Australia be an option to players that might not be getting poached by English clubs straight away? Because there does seem to be a lot of Irish fans who I speak to here on the Why Big Football show, they do vent a little bit of frustration at the fact that the Irish players only seem to want to go to play in England. You know, maybe they should broaden their horizons. Australia should be an option, surely.
Yeah, again, I'd have to refer back to the thing that stands against that is this restriction on five overseas players. And I think for a young Irish player, if he hasn't established himself, and I don't mean this disrespectfully to the League of Ireland by any means, but if he's the perception would be that if he hasn't managed to establish himself at a club over in England, I do think that A-League clubs might be a touch reluctant to take what would be perceived as a gamble on a play like that. I'm not saying it wouldn't happen by any means, but I'd say that there would be certain stumbling blocks along the way if that was a plan that a play was to go down.
Yeah, of course, Ireland nearly got Tim Cahill. Unfortunately, the eligibility rule, which usually works in Ireland's favour, actually worked against us with this one, because at the time, I think he had been capped by the Australian under-21s team and he wasn't actually able to play for Ireland. The rule since has, in fact, changed, but he would have been certainly a good player that Ireland could have done with down the years.
Absolutely. He's been a fantastic player, you'd have to say. In some ways, has he perhaps eclipsed Harry Kewell as the greatest Australian player of the modern era? That's certainly something that that could be debated. But yeah, he's been absolutely fantastic in terms of flying the flag for Australia and also for the Socceroos. A terrific player for them, regular goal scorer as well at international level. And I think there was disappointment in Australia that he opted to go to the MLS. There has been talk for several years that he would come back to the A-League, and he might well do over the next couple of years. But I think people, or a large chunk of the Australian football public, were hoping that Tim Cahill would already be back and playing in the A-League by now.
Yeah, it's. We'll see. We'll watch this space. Listen, Gareth, thanks a million for a huge insight into Australian football, the A-League, and how it compares to that in Ireland as well. And just before I let you go, for yourself now going forward, what would be your plans for the future? You, no doubt you're going to be keeping a close eye on Australian football and seeing it develop over the years.
I am indeed. Yeah, I'm still actually working for Perth Glory at the moment. I still do their match day programme for them, which obviously the wonders of the internet make that possible.
Yeah.
But I'm very much looking forward to watching the League of Ireland when it gets underway. I'm very interested to get along to some games and see how things work, how the clubs work and so on. And hopefully, touch wood, get involved in some capacity in the League of Ireland now going forward.
Well, Gareth, thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show, and we wish you a great Christmas.
Thanks very much, Dave, and the same to you and all your listeners.
If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on talkingsport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. The West's awake. Football in Galway will be reunited in 2014 with the emergence of Galway FC. It's an exciting time for soccer in the West, and we're delighted to be joined by Cian O'Connell, one of the media guys involved with this fantastic adventure. Cian, setting up a new clubs, they can be a nightmare at the best of times, but do you feel that you guys have a bit of an advantage because the infrastructure and the support are kind of already in place?
Yeah, well, it's exciting times here, Dave, for sure. It's great that the four stakeholders involved, the Galway United Supporters Trust, Merview United, Salthill Devon and the Galway and District League have all come together. There has obviously been some problems over the last number of years in Galway trying to get a vibrant League of Ireland side together that involves, I suppose, all aspects of Galway. Merview did quite well in the First Division themselves this season, but I suppose the wider sporting public in Galway all want a team to watch, and in Eamon DC Park, one of the best stadiums in the country. So I would agree, Dave, that there's a good infrastructure in place in clubs such as Merview and Salthill, who have state-of-the-art training facilities, and obviously the passion and drive that the Galway United Supporters Trust will bring to the party is crucial to this project, because obviously in 2011, when the Galway United Supporters Trust were in charge of Galway United, things didn't go so well because they were just firefighting the whole time. But at the moment, the majority of people in Galway United Supporters Trust are on board. So there are some people not fully subscribing to all things Galway FC at present, because they're insisting on that some sort of a co-op structure should be in place with the club. But the club, Galway FC, are currently working hard on that. They've set up a subcommittee who are looking into the possibility of having a co-op structure in place for maybe by the start of next season. So there's plenty of positivity in Galway, and really I think people in the West, having not had a Galway United to support for the past 2 years, there really is an appetite, and really is appetite for League of Ireland football in Galway, and 2014 should be a really interesting adventure for everyone involved.
Oh, it's exciting stuff, Cian. It really is. As you said, fans of the historic Galway United club, they must be pinching themselves knowing that they have their club back. And I suppose the experience gained, as you said, by the likes of Merview United and Salthill Devon from actually playing in the league, that probably would have been maybe the driving force in terms of getting Galway FC going.
Yeah, well, I suppose the problem a lot of people in Galway had was they couldn't fully back Salthill or Merview because they only were representing part of the footballing community, whereas obviously with a Galway FC or Galway United previously, before Merview and Salthill Devon entered the league, if there's one team, that should be the team that everyone in the county and the its hinterland aspires to playing for. And I think that's what's happening again. And I think Galway FC have appointed a good manager in Tommy Dunne. He's obviously alluded to it himself in several interviews recently about the experience he gathered with Cork City when they were starting off under Cork City for us. He he cobbled a team together within a week or two, and in the second season in charge, Cork gained promotion back into the Premier Division. So he obviously had to deal with a lot of off the field politics and stuff like that when he was at Cork City, and he did a very good job steering them back on the road to respectability. And I think in Galway, people feel that he can do that. He's been very proactive. In his first week or so in the job, he's contacted players that featured for Salthill Devon Armour Review last season. He's not going to have a massive budget here in Galway, but he knows what's available to him. He's spoken to players that have represented those clubs, and obviously Merview had a very encouraging campaign this year in the First Division. So they have players very much capable of operating in the First Division. If you throw in one or two players maybe that into the squads, players that might have played with Galway United previously or players from around the league, I think you'd have the basis or the nucleus of a strong squad. And I think that's what the people of Galway want. The club was formally launched last Monday. There was more than 200 people at the launch, but that's a staggering figure and confirms and proves the interest that exists currently in Galway. So I think it's a very, very exciting times for Galway. And as you said, the players that have played with Salthill and Merview, they will benefit this club immeasurably.
Yeah, you mentioned about the League of Ireland and how important this is for the League of Ireland. But how vital is it that Galway as a city and a county has a soccer club that can challenge? We see all the cities in Ireland have been able to field good teams that do compete. No doubt it's great to be back, I suppose, at the top table and have the city and county represented, because you guys were kind of out on your own for a while there.
Yeah, it was terrible that, like, a lot of people in Galway couldn't go and watch League of Ireland football for the past 2 years, or they felt that they couldn't go and watch. There obviously were teams at Merview and Salthill Devon, there wasn't a Galway team per se. So that it's crucial to everyday life that you can go and you can have a team to support. And it's I think in the League of Ireland, if you were to look at the history of the League of Ireland, every major town or city that have League of Ireland association, most places have gone through bad times. Look, take Limerick for example. They were out of the top flight for 19 years. I watched many of their games at home this season in Thomond Park, but it was great to see what they brought back to the Premier Division. And hopefully Galway United struggled in their last season in 2011, but I feel that Galway FC with everyone on board can make a bid for First Division honours and be very competitive in the First Division, and then eventually get back up into the top flight of Irish football. That's the drive, that's the ambition that they have, and I think it is crucial for the people of Galway. Galway United traditionally had reasonable crowds in their last few seasons in existence. They had very much one of the best supported clubs at home. They had 600-700 season ticket holders, which in the League of Ireland is quite a good figure.
Absolutely.
So I think I would envisage that Galway FC starting off can attract good crowds in that region. Maybe for the first few games they might get 1,000-1,500. That's a decent crowd in the First Division. So I think really in Galway there's huge appetite for football again, and it's great to see so many people from different parts of the footballing community gathering together. There's real huge work going on behind the scenes at the moment. Season ticket launches, season ticket drives before Christmas, and considering the people of Galway have been starved for this for a few years, I think it's really a positive thing, and I think that in the future Galway FC can make a big impact to the local community here.
You mentioned, Keane, how the appointment of Tommy Dunn, it's kind of like it fits like a glove with the experience that he has. Is it fair to say, though, that the new manager has probably one of the most difficult jobs to do in the league so far, kind of starting from scratch in a way?
Absolutely, Dave. I fully agree with that, because Tommy Dunn has now inherited a job where he has no player signed for next season. He has to go. He's working around the clock at the moment trying to meet players that have that are coming with recommendations from the people that he's spoken to in surrounding the game in Galway. So I completely agree. It's a tough job, but I think that any footballers that wish to progress their careers will see Galway FC as a good stepping stone. You're going to be playing in Terryland Park, a fine footballing surface for the next season. There's going to be a decent crowd. There's going to be interest in Galway, so it's a decent proposition for any young footballer wishing to develop from the locality and from further afield. But Tommy Dunn he's impressed people in Galway. The manner in which he's started in the role, he's been very enthusiastic. He's been very proactive dealing with his job. So I do take on board that it is a tough challenge. But Tommy Dunn hopes to have maybe in and around 30 players training when pre-season commences in mid-January, and I see that as a realistic target, as he said himself. Not all of them will sign, but if he can hit the ground running by attracting the best local players that are available to him with the budget that he has, that'd be a good start. Because all you have to do is look around the League of Ireland at the moment. There's significant talent in Galway. You have players that featured for Galway United dotted around the league with the best clubs in the league. You have Stephen O'Donnell, Pat Hoban, for example, at Dundalk. You have Stephen Folan, Rory Gaffney in Limerick. You have the likes of John Russell, won the league with St. Pat's, Irla Davern. There's numerous players dotted around the league that have commenced their careers playing local football in Galway. So I think Tommy Dunn will be trying to hit the next generation, trying to unearth players that can reach that standard. And I don't see any reason why in the coming years you don't have more players that make significant progress in the League of Ireland game, starting off with Galway FC.
Yeah, indeed. It sounds so exciting, and it's a fantastic venture to be a part of. On the Why Big Football show last month, we had Puro for Sligo Rovers, Rory Houston. He told us how their aim was to unite the whole of Connacht behind Sligo. Now, they've captured counties like Mayo, Roscommon and Leitrim already. No doubt you guys will have something to say about that. And what areas in general would you be hoping to kind of promote the club and gain support from? No doubt the whole of Galway as a county is one of your main aims.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just establishing ourselves first and foremost. That's what everyone in Galway wants Galway FC to do initially. But throughout the years, Galway FC have always had strong links with Mayo. One of Galway United's greatest ever players would be Alan Murphy. He's a Ballinrobe guy, a guy who featured in the Mayo senior football panel this year. So I would say in Galway FC will share similar aspirations to what Sligo Rovers have done. And Sligo Rovers have set the standard out west for so many years, and then the fact that they've for the last 20-30 years they've always provided full-time professional football and a full-time professional setup, which is an amazing achievement. And there's such great tradition in Sligo and in Galway. There'd be such regard for what Sligo Rovers have achieved. So if Galway FC were to have anything like the success Sligo Rovers have had in the last couple of years, winning a few cups and winning the Airtricity League Premier Division, that is obviously is the dream. That's the objective for Galway FC starting off. But Galway FC would like to hit the local community. Galway's neighbouring a lot of counties. It neighbours Clare, it neighbours Mayo, it neighbours so many counties in Connacht. And I think that anyone associated with Galway FC would hope that people from these areas will come and watch Galway FC. And the only way that Galway FC can do that is by making sure that the people of Galway come first, and then by providing good entertainment every second week when the games are played at Éamon DC Park. And I think that Galway FC can make a positive start in March, and if that happens, I think people will flock to Éamon DC Park once more.
It's almost like, Keane, I think the League of Ireland is slightly changing in recent years. A lot of teams are kind of tapping into the county pride, maybe even the GAA following side of things. We've seen the likes of Cork representing the whole county, Limerick, as you said, now Galway. Do you think that's the way forward in the league? Obviously, counties like Dublin are always never going to quite have that because there's so many prominent clubs with big histories there. But as you said, rather than having two teams like Merview and Salthill, you now have one team for Galway. It seems to be the way the league is going. We see Limerick now as well, and they get to play in Thomond Park in the heart of Limerick. Do you think that's a good thing for the league?
Yeah, I think, well, as regards Galway FC, they have to target that because you should be proud. Anyone from the region should be proud and aspire to playing for your city or county team. That's when I was growing up, I played football and I played Gaelic football, and that was your ambition as any person from the place. You should want to represent. That should be your objective. And I think as you alluded to there, Dave. People in Cork, they want to play for Cork City. People in Limerick, they want to play for Limerick FC. Waterford United, people should want to play for Waterford United. That's the way it should be. And I think Galway FC will want to be a community-based club. They will want the people of Galway to be interested. Now, they have a challenge. They have a challenge to bring everyone on board. At the moment, they have majority of people on board, but there's still some people in one of the stakeholders' ghosts that they need to bring them with them. Them people are vital to ensuring that this project works, and it is to represent a maroon team in AIM and DC Park. Any 14, 15 year old, that's what they should want to do in the next year or two. The youngsters will be given a shot to play for Galway FC. There's no doubt about that. It's not going to be a case of Galway FC going out and spending huge pots of money on bringing in established players. That's not going to be the way that the club runs. It's a real chance for exciting young players to come in, get a chance to play in the League of Ireland. At the moment, there's two divisions, two senior divisions in Ireland. So that's a good chance to come and put yourself in the shop window if you want to develop your career. Take Galway United. So many players that have played for Galway United. David Ford, the current Irish keeper, he started off with Galway United. He's a player that people will want to follow. Them kind of role models have to exist in sport. Have to exist no matter what the sport is. You want local heroes are best, as the old saying says. So hopefully Galway FC can follow in the footsteps of Galway United and become part of Galway society. And I think that's what they want to do. And by having a maroon team in AIM and DC Park, I think that is really a good development.
Incredible stuff, because I think in this day and age, Keane, we have a lot of supporters and particularly young kids that they're playing a bit of everything, you know, not just soccer but Gaelic and hurling and that, and if they prefer the soccer later on, they can aspire to play for Galway in soccer, or they can play Gaelic for Galway or hurling for Galway. It's really terrific. I like the way it's going. Just from your own point of view and the promotional side of things, no doubt it's a new adventure begins. You guys certainly do have your work cut out for you, but you'll be trying to promote the club as many times as possible, and maybe you'll have the likes of Michael D. Higgins down there giving you a bit of a hand as well. Exciting times, but no doubt a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, absolutely, a lot of work to be done. Michael D. Higgins, such a strong link with the game in Galway, having served as president of Galway United and being a regular visitor to Terryland Park down through the years. He'd be there with the scarf long before he was a president of Ireland, when he was when he was working as a lecturer in UCG back many moons ago. He would always attend Terryland Park. But the club have been very proactive so far in the last, now that the club has only been established, there's a real drive on it within the club to hit all social media outlets and for people, for young people to connect with the club. I think there's real good work going on off the field at the moment, and hopefully all that work will translate into success on the field. I think the club recognises the challenges and that await at the moment, but they really have been keen to hit the ground running. As we mentioned earlier, the launch on Monday night was a very successful launch. There was 200 people present at the Connacht Hotel. That gives you that should give listeners an indication to just how craved and how much a Galway League of Ireland team is desired in the West. So there is huge challenges awaiting Galway FC. We've no doubt about that out west. But I think there are challenges that the club will embrace, and it's good that there's so many that the four stakeholders are supplying people with real good ideas, with good acumen.
Yeah, and just before we let you go, for any fans or that looking to find out more information about Galway FC and follow news about the club, I assume you guys now have Twitter pages set up, Facebook and a website.
Twitter pages, Facebook and a website all set up, and people have been very happy with the formation of those pages. The Twitter page is Galway _FC. There is a Facebook page, Galway FC, set up, and our website www.galwayfc.ie. And the club are really keen to mirror the successful approaches of several clubs in the League of Ireland. You've just got to look at the likes of Cork City, Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers, who've been really proactive in these areas, and the people associated with Galway FC just want to run a similar ship to what they've started out. And we'd urge anyone and anyone interested to make contact with these pages and to follow Galway FC and to provide any assistance that they can.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck, Keane. No doubt you guys are going to be very successful, and I suppose the Galway machine will roll on and on and onwards and upwards. It's a long adventure ahead, but I hope with the good people behind you and the backers, it's going to be a successful one.
Yeah, hopefully as you said, the Comer brothers have come on board with a generous financial sponsorship for three seasons. That's really given this project huge impetus, and hopefully going forward Galway FC can make a big impact in the League of Ireland game. That's the goal, and that's the ambition, and hopefully it will be realised.
If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on talkingsport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. Now, those of you Irish soccer fans who crave a bit of soccer chat on a Saturday morning should turn on the dial to Sunshine Radio 106.8 in Dublin, online around the world on sunshineradio.ie, and UPC channel 933 across Ireland. Dublin's Talking Sport is on from 9 to 11 with former world snooker champion Ken Doherty. And Ken, it's probably fair to say that a lot of sports fans might be a little bit surprised to discover how soccer mad you actually are.
Yeah, well, I'm sport mad, to be honest, not just soccer mad, but particularly, I mean, soccer is obviously my favourite sport outside of my own sport, snooker, of course, you know. But I love all sports, because I think there is a correlation between them all, and when you watch excellence in one sport, you certainly appreciate it. You sit up and take notice. So I love chatting about it, but particularly soccer, because at least I know a little bit about soccer, and Reggie did most of the rugby in anyway, because I don't know much about rugby only from watching it, you know. But now I have great fun doing it, I must say, and it's a great challenge to talk and interact with some of the listeners and interview some interesting people as well. So it's really good fun.
It's a very good listen, Ken, I have to say. You seem to be really kind of enjoying presenting, as you said. It seems like almost a hobby where you can kind of step outside the realms of snooker, and it's something different.
It is, yeah. No, it's completely different, and it's a great challenge as well. I mean, it's not easy, but it's like because you've got to do your research, you've got to know your stuff. But I mean, once you've got some interesting guests and you're chatting away, it's like we try and make it sort of feel like, you know, you're sitting in your front room or you're sitting in the pub with the guests, and you're just like, you know, chewing the fat basically. And whatever opinions, everybody has their own opinion about, you know, different sports and different characters in sport. And that's the great thing about sport, that you can all listen and give your own opinion, and whether you're right or wrong, you know, cause some controversy along the way, and and get people talking about it. But it's really good fun, you know.
It's a great show for all sports fans, as you said, but particularly I think for Irish soccer fans. You take a lot of calls from the fans, and one of the topics I think you recently did was comparing the Irish players at Liverpool to the Irish players of Man United down the years. That got a pretty big reaction.
Yeah, it did. I mean, we had Simon Delaney, formerly of Bachelor's Walk, who was doing this project about Irish players down through the years, and the best Irish 11 players that had played for Manchester United down the years. And we were sort of making comparables with all the Irish players who had played for Liverpool down the years. And we came up with some great names. I tell you, you could pick some great teams, Irish teams, that would be complete world beaters, you know, if you put them all together in one team in one era. But I mean, they're the type of things. I mean, it's like anything you're doing. If you sort of keep it topical and sort of raise questions and listen to the listeners themselves and see what they have to say, and then, you know, listen to their arguments and their opinions. But we've had some heated moments and some really good laugh moments. But I think generally it's very relaxed, very laid back. And both myself and Reggie Corrigan, we really enjoy doing it. It's like we're totally outside the box, and it's a real joy to go in there and chew the fat for a couple of hours and have a good bit of laugh.
Yeah. Now, obviously, Ken, you're a very big Irish soccer fan of the team. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Are you excited
yeah.
now about the whole O'Neill Keane dream team in the year ahead?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, in the beginning, I wasn't quite sure whether Roy Keane could be number two to anybody. But I think he's mellowed a little bit. And I think, like, working, you know, with ITV and the media, I think this job has probably come at the right time for him. I think Martin O'Neill has made a brave decision to bring him in. But I think it will work well. I think, you know, I think it's caused, what it has done, it's caused great excitement amongst the Irish fans, amongst the Irish public, amongst the Irish media. And if that's causing an effect with those, you can imagine the effect it's causing amongst the Irish players themselves. Because, you know, with someone like Martin O'Neill, who has had great success both as a player and indeed as a manager, and of course Roy Keane, who was untold success as a player, but not so much as a manager, but they will derive so much inspiration from the two characters. It must be great times to be a part of that international team. And from a fan's point of view, which we are, it's going to be exciting. I think they've got some great chance. They've got some young guys, good players coming through. And I think, if anything, they can get the best out of the sort of the team that we have. And I think, I hope that's going to be the case going forward.
Yeah, hopefully it will be. Now, it had been a crazy year for the boys in green, Ken. We finished fourth in our World Cup group. And were you a little bit surprised that we didn't even manage to get ahead of Austria? We were targeting the second place. Whether we would have qualified had we met Portugal in the playoffs would have been another story. But were you a little bit surprised or disappointed? I think a lot of Irish fans might have felt that, judging by the way we played in particular games, we didn't really deserve to get the second place.
Yeah, to be honest, was I surprised? I wasn't really surprised. I didn't think that we were going to do that well, and particularly after the showing in the European Championships. I think they, as I said, they've got some good young players coming through, and they have some of the senior players that are still there. But I just don't think, like, Trapattoni had sort of served his time, and he just couldn't get any sort of better sort of performances out of that team. I think his time was sort of spent, and he possibly should have gone after the European Championship. I think it might have been the best time to go for him. And that's why I think now is a good time for these guys, because they will freshen it up. I mean, if Roy Keane and Martin O'Neill can inspire these guys and get them going and, you know, get the adrenaline, trying to get the 100% out of these guys, because that's what they're going to have to do. They don't have international soccer stars in the team like England may have or some of the other great footballing nations. But what they will have, two great men in their dressing room who will inspire them, who will fire them up, and will get the most that they can from that team, you know. And I think you know, the prospects might be looking good to qualify, because I think more teams qualify for the European Championships next time around. I think it might be three or four from the group, so that will give them a better chance to to qualify for the next championships, and I think they should do, you know.
Yeah, fingers crossed, Ken. Now, we've seen you on a lot of kind of programmes, documentaries about Irish sporting moments as a whole, not just your own sport, snooker, but a lot of fans will want to know, Ken, you know, you've been to and watched a lot of Ireland games over the years. What has been your most memorable moment, if you could pick one? It's a hard one.
Well, I'll tell you, the most memorable moment I'll never forget was when I was in the Giant Stadium in New York in 1994 when Ray Houghton scored against Italy. I think that was possibly the greatest day that I've ever sort of watched an Ireland side perform, and particularly in that stadium where you would expect in, like, you know, maybe 80% Italian, you know, in New Jersey, as opposed to 80% Irish, because that's what it felt like. You know, there was like a sea of green, and they got the result. They beat Italy 1-0, and you know, the whole team, like the likes of Keane and McGrath and Houghton and everybody on that team, just played their hearts out, and it was just a magical moment. I think that was my best ever. I was sorry that I wasn't in Italy, you know, when they got to the quarterfinals, when they played in Rome in the Stadio Olimpico against the Italians. I think that was a great run as well. But for me, actually being there and being in the stadium in New Jersey, in the Joint Stadium against Italy, was in 94. That was possibly the best moment I was ever at an Ireland match.
A fantastic moment to be, and I think a lot of people will say that perhaps Roy Keane really arrived on the international scene at that World Cup. I mean, people forget that he actually was one of our standout players at that 94 World Cup. Who, in your opinion, Ken, has been the best Irish player from the generations? I know it's a long thing. You could go back to John Giles, Liam Brady, Roy Keane, Paul McGrath, Robbie Keane.
Yeah, I mean, you picked some great names there. Yeah, my favourite of all time would possibly have been, either Paul McGrath or Roy Keane. I think they sort of, for me, you know, they gave everything, you know, and particularly Keane himself, you know, like every time he played, and I was watching the documentary only the other night, last night with Vieira, like every time he played, he wanted to win. He felt Ireland had a great chance of winning, and even in that time when he was in Saipan, he really felt that he was going to that World Cup with Ireland, with a great bunch of players, and believing that they could really go far in that tournament. And he was one of the few that had that sort of inner belief and strength and power and leadership. He had all the great qualities that you would ever want in a player, you know.
And it was actually interesting hearing from that documentary, Ken, that when Patrick Vieira was asked about France, he said, "They gave me everything." When Roy Keane was asked about Ireland, he said, "Frustration." And I think the underlining fact was that he really had the best interests of the country at heart, and he really just wanted the best, which might have been a step too far for us.
Probably was, yeah. I mean, he probably put it right and said that he wasn't playing for McCarty, he was playing for his country, you know. But he never got a chance to say that. And I think it's, you know, they came to the end of his tether with McCarty and vice versa, you know, and they sort of couldn't work together. And it sort of all ended in tears a little bit. But that was probably one of the saddest moments in Irish soccer sport in any way, you know. But yeah, I mean, McGrath in another part, he was a different type of player, but what a great servant for Ireland as well, and he put in some magical performance. Robbie Keane as well, you know, scoring all these goals for Ireland. You know, we've been blessed, like, you know, during my time that I've seen some fantastic players playing for Ireland, you know.
Yeah, and what about the current crop, Ken? You know, players we have at the moment. We see the likes of Seamus Coleman, James McCarthy, even Andy Reid at Forest, all having terrific seasons. Who do you think at the moment would be our most valuable and best player from the current crop?
I really like McCarthy playing in the middle of the park. I think he's going to be a great player. He's having a great season with Everton, and I think he's going to improve. He's a very, very young lad, and I think he's going to improve immensely with age. I think he's going to be another great sort of centre midfield player for Ireland, there's no doubt. Seamus Coleman, of course, as a right back, a wing back, is having he's putting in some great performances for Everton as well. But probably those two would probably be my best two as well. I like Mark Wilson as well. I like Mark Wilson, who plays for Stoke. I think he's been putting in some good performances as well, a couple of players there. Houlihan as well, I like as well, although he's I think he's 29, 30 now. But I think the youngest guy, of the young crop, I think McCarthy stands out for me as probably being the best of them.
A never-ending engine is what a lot of people have been describing McCarthy this year for Everton so far. Finally, before I let you go, Ken, your hope for the boys in green for 2014, what would you like to see happen? I know a lot of people tend to get carried away when looking ahead, but would you like to see, say, more new players come in, new talent, or would you just like to see a little bit of what we've seen against Latvia, you know, the no-fear mentality?
Absolutely. Well, I think, like, with these two guys, with the likes of Martin O'Neill and the likes of Kane, that they were always sort of ball players. They wanted a ball on the ground. They wanted to pass it. They wanted to play, like, the beautiful game, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to see the ball up in the air all the time. They want to play it on the deck, and I think that's the best chance that Ireland have. Be hard, you know, tackle and chase down balls and give 100%. It's the full commitment to the short, you know. And I think, you know, going forward, I think they can definitely qualify for the European Championships next time around in 2016. And I think that's the target. If they don't, I think they'll be very, very disappointed. I think it'll be a failure. But I'm hoping that they will qualify. I'm confident that they'll qualify. And I think they're going to be a great, exciting times. We're going to see some great matches from this Ireland squad and exciting times from Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane.
Well, Ken, it's terrific to talk to you about Irish soccer. Thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that's it from the Why Big Football Show this month. My thanks to Ken Doherty, John Delaney, Keane O'Connell and Gareth Morgan for joining us. And also thanks to you for listening and making the show possible. We podcast the show across a number of Irish soccer websites, including whybig.ie, foot.ie, pogmagoal, goal.com, Ireland, you name it, we got it, we have it all. A huge thanks from myself, Dave O'Grady, to all the Irish fans who listen to the show and contribute weekly, and to all the journalists and media people and footballers who get involved. And I look forward to talking to you again. Have a great Christmas and a happy new year.